taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. It's going to be an interesting show today. You know, in my discussions here, and in obviously in my meetings, in my classes, in my speeches, we talk a lot about rights. And I see a lot of people, I hear a lot of people, I read a lot of people talking about rights. But, you know, the sad thing is, when I hear most people talking about rights, I'm reminded, I think back to Inigo Montoya from the movie, the movie as I saw it. I didn't read the book. I saw the movie, The Princess Bride. When he looks at Fassini and says, "You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means." Sadly, it seems most Americans today, at least the ones that I've encountered, when they keep using the word right, I don't think it means what they think it means. So I want to take some time today, and I want to go through a process. I wrote a class. It's available on constitutionscholars.com. It is not part of the free class, it's part of being an apprentice, part of becoming a scholar, the training program we have there for people to become scholars. And I have a whole class on defining a right, on what is a right. And, you know, I don't have time to go through all of it, although I will hit some of the high points. It's probably a lot more complicated than you thought, but here's the good news. By the end here, in fact, by the break, I will give you two sentences that will not only help you understand what a right is, but how to apply it 99% of the time. Right? So let's do that. Let's take a look at what a right is. Now, I don't know about you. When I go to define a word, I like to go to dictionaries. Seems to be a good place to go. I prefer Webster's 1828 dictionary. Why? Because Noah Webster was a contemporary of the Founding Fathers. He was invited by Alexander Hamilton to edit the Federalist Papers. So I think he's a pretty good person to know what these words mean. He's been working on dictionaries and primers since, you know, pretty much around the time of the founding. He didn't publish his full dictionary until 1828, although he did publish many other documents and books along the way. That's why I use him in these contexts. And he defines a right as a just claim, immunity, privilege. And he describes, all men have a right to secure enjoyment of life, personal safety, liberty, and property. We deem the right of trial by jury invaluable, particularly in the case of crimes. Rights are natural, civil, political, religious, personal, and public. So how'd that help? You all understand rights now? Neither did I. But it's a good launching point, a good starting point. So I did my research, and I found that there's two ways we can categorize rights. Rights can be either alienable or unalienable. They can be either positive or negative. So what do I mean? Well, the Declaration of Independence says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights." Now, that got me thinking. If there are unalienable rights, first of all, what is an unalienable right? And if there's something that's unalienable, well, does that mean there are rights that are alienable? So an alienable, again, going back to Webster's dictionary, is an adjective that may be sold or transferred to another. And they give the example of land is alienable because I can sell you my land. We can write up a deed and a change of ownership and you could take possession of my land. Now, something that's unalienable means it's not alienable. It cannot be alienated. It cannot be transferred. And they refer to it as unalienable rights. Now, in the case of unalienable rights, I tend to think of it slightly differently. My standard is not, can it be transferred? Because there are situations where you can transfer an unalienable right, and we'll talk about that a little later. But the question is, can someone transfer it from me? In other words, does someone have the right to transfer ownership of my life, my liberty, my pursuit of happiness. So what makes a right unalienable? Well, the short answer is it comes from our Creator. The Declaration said we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Since our Creator gave us these rights, no one else has the right to take them away. So when we look at rights like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we were endowed by our Creator. Only our Creator has a legitimate authority to take them away. But again, if that's an unalienable right, well, what makes a right alienable? Well, if unalienable rights come from our Creator, where do alienable rights come from? Well, they're man-made. See, mankind acts collectively by forming governments. And in doing so, we often create alienable rights. Things like, well, your right to vote. You don't have an unalienable right to vote. God didn't give you the right to vote. So your right to vote is alienable. It was given to you by man. Man can regulate it. Man can alienate it. Which is why they turn around and say, you're not allowed to vote until age 18. Another example would be your right to legal counsel. You have a right to legal assistance if you're charged with a crime. That right, that's not something that comes from God. That's something that man created. So it is technically an alienable right. And we can get into maybe another time a much deeper discussion about alienable versus unalienable rights. Well, let's take a look at positive versus negative rights. And these can be a little counterintuitive. Why? Because we think of things that are positive as positive, think that they're good. But this isn't so much a positive, good, negative, bad. This is really a question of what someone else must do for you. In other words, a positive right requires a positive action from somebody. It's something that must be done for you. Put another way, it's a just claim on someone else's actions, whereas a negative right means they can't do something to you. It's a just immunity from someone else's actions. So things like provide you with a speedy and public trial. The government must provide you with that. That means they must have a judge. They must have a courtroom. They must call a jury. These are all things the government has to do for you in the situation of if you're charged with a crime. You also have the positive right to legal counsel. The government, if you can't afford one, we've all heard the Miranda warning, right? We've watched a crime program, and you know you have a right to remain silent. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be provided for you. That's something government must do for you. And the other one we see a lot is elections. See, if you have a right to vote, well, there has to be an election. The government must do something. They must make ballots. They must have polling places. There's a lot of things and a lot of money that goes into holding an election. The government must do that. It's a just claim on government actions. Now, compare that with negative rights, things the government cannot do to you. And again, I'm focusing on government because I talk a lot about the Constitution. Someone can deny you a right and it still be legal, which is why I'm focusing on government, which gets into the legal question. So let's look at some things the government cannot do to you. They cannot infringe on your right to speak. They cannot infringe on your right to keep and bear arms. They cannot search you without a warrant. In other words, these are immunities from the acts of governments. But there's one other thing we have to really understand, and that is, well, who has rights? Well, it seems pretty obvious individuals have rights, right? We're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. But the question is, do organizations have rights? Does Facebook, Twitter, Coca-Cola, Major League Baseball, do these corporations and organizations, do they have rights? Does the ACLU have rights? Do labor unions have rights? Put another way, do governments have rights? Kind of a subset of these organizations. So the question becomes, do governments have just claims or not? Just meaning equitable, due, merited. Well, states have just claims on immunity from federal intervention. The 10th Amendment says basically that any power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution generally remains with the states. They have a just claim of immunity from the federal government messing in something they have not been delegated power to. By the same standpoint, the federal government has a just claim to the powers granted to them by that Constitution. Meaning the federal government has the just claim to tax in order to have a military. That Congress has a just claim to pass laws that enact the power that the Constitution has given the federal government, the United States government. So if unalienable rights come from our Creator, where do governments get their rights? Well, they get them from their Creator, we the people. Right? Remember, that's from the Declaration of Independence, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So that's a really quick, brief overview of how we can organize and define a right. But what's probably more important than understanding what a right is understanding its legitimate use. Now, we are supposed to be a nation of free people, meaning, in general, we should be left to live at liberty. We should be free to exercise our rights however we see fit. But what is this liberty we're talking about exercising? And this will help us understand rights as we understand, you know, a right is the just claim of either a privilege to do something or immunity from action, basically the ability to live at liberty. Now, liberty gets a little complicated. I've heard a lot of people define liberty a lot of different ways. But again, going to Webster's 1828 dictionary, liberty in general is freedom from restraint in a general sense and applicable to the body or to the will or mind. The body is at liberty when not confined. The will or mind is at liberty when not checked or controlled. A man enjoys liberty when no physical force operates to restrain his actions or volitions. Sounds pretty good, right? You do whatever you want. However, well, there's a problem with that. First of all, freedom from restraint does not mean freedom from consequence. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a couple of minutes. But if I can do whatever I want without any restraint, well, that means I can do to you whatever I want because there's no restraint placed on me. If I want to steal your wallet, if I want to live in your house, if I want to drive your car, well, there's no restraint. This is commonly called anarchy. And sadly, it's also part of its very close cousin, democracy, which I talk about in other places. Now, the dictionary goes on to say, natural liberty consists in the power of acting as one thinks fit without any restraint or control except from the laws of nature. Is a state of exemption from control of others and of positive laws and the institutions of social life. This liberty is abridged by the establishment of government. So, natural liberty says you can do whatever you want, but you restrain yourself based on these natural laws, the laws that are so obvious, most people don't even need to have them written down. They're just there. You know, I like to summarize it, as I heard from one person, we don't hurt people, we don't take their stuff. That is natural liberty. This is probably closer to what most people think of when they're thinking of liberty. I can do what I want, but yeah, I know it's wrong to steal, to murder, to in other ways, you know, harm other people. This is more most people think. Again, from the dictionary, civil liberty is the liberty of men in a state of society or natural liberty so far only abridged and restrained as is necessary and expedient for the safety and interests of the society, state, or nation. Civil liberty is an exemption from the arbitrary will of others, which exemption is secured by established laws, which restrain every man from injuring or controlling another. Hence, the restraint of law are essential to civil liberty. So you notice we went from absolutely no restraint to we restraining ourselves based on natural law to the restraint of laws, but only those that are necessary and expedient for the safety and interests of society. For example, here in America, we drive on the right-hand side of the road. Somebody had to decide we're going to drive on the right-hand side of the road, that everyone's going to be supposed to drive on the right-hand side. for the safety of society. These are the types of limitations that are placed, again, under civil liberty. These laws are designed to restrain people from injuring others. Again, not from injuring themselves, from injuring or controlling others. This, I believe, is a liberty that our founding fathers were thinking of when they said you could not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Live as you want, restrained only by natural law and what laws are necessary to keep you from harming others. So, you know, the dictionary goes on to say, the liberty of one depends not so much on removal of all restraint from him as on the due restraint upon the liberty of others. Meaning, you live at liberty when others are restrained from infringing on your rights. See, liberty isn't the removal of restraint, but is the due restraint of our actions. Real liberty, as most people think of it, is not I'm free to do whatever I want. It's I can do what I want as long as I don't harm others. And there's one more line from the dictionary definition of tyranny that I want you to understand. It says, a restraint of natural liberty, not necessary or expedient for the public, is tyranny or oppression. Now stop and think about that for a moment. Think about how many laws are designed not to protect you from the dangers of others, but to tell you how to live your life. A restraint that's not necessary for the safety of others, but for your own safety, for your own good. What light bulbs you can use, what toilets you can use, what safety devices must be in your vehicle, what is and isn't allowed in your food, what drugs you are and are not allowed to take. What standards you must use to build your house, whether or not you can even build your house. These are all restrictions that are not necessary for the public. They are tyranny. They are oppression. And we've just gotten so used to them that we accept it. We've been brainwashed into accepting that governments have the authority to tell us how to live our lives. Now, I told you I would wrap this up with two simple sentences. And these two sentences are going to be important not only for the rest of the episode, but for every episode from now on. Every time I'm referring to rights, I want you to keep these two sentences in mind. The first is that to legitimately exercise a right, it must not infringe on the rights of others. That goes for any right you have. You are free to exercise your right until you infringe on the rights of others. You have the right to peaceably assemble, but as soon as you start using that to infringe on the rights of others, that's not legitimate, and there needs to be consequences for that. Which leads me to the second sentence, that for a right to be legitimate, you must be capable of exercising it without infringing on the rights of others. This is, I think, where most Americans fall flat on their face. They see something that they believe with all their heart is right and just and true, and they are more than willing to infringe on the rights of others to get it. I see this in the right and the left, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, progressive, you name it. Even people who would refer to themselves as dyed-in-the-wool constitutional, originalists often fall into the trap of assuming a right that can infringe on the rights of another. And you say, Paul, where do you get such an idea that my rights can't infringe on another? Well, the Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal, doesn't it? If I can exercise my rights to the detriment of yours, are we equal? If my rights supersede yours, are we equal? And vice versa, if your rights supersede mine, we're not equal. So if we're going to be equal, then I must exercise my rights in a way that does not restrict or infringe on someone else's. my rights. I cannot use my right to infringe on the rights of another. And one I hear all the time has to do with gun laws. I've heard multiple people claim that their Second Amendment right to carry a firearm, to keep and bear arms, trumps the property right of a business owner. I wholeheartedly disagree, and I've had this argument multiple times. I own my property. I get to decide who is and is not allowed on my property and under what conditions. If someone wants to hunt on my property, they must come and get my permission first. If I don't want them to drive vehicles on my property, I have that right. And if I don't want them to carry a firearm on my property, I have that right as well, because it's my property. And their right to keep and bear arms does not supersede my property rights. Well, if that's the true of my home and my farm, why would it not be true of my business? If I own the building I'm in, or even if I'm renting the building I'm in, just because it's open to the public doesn't mean it's no longer mine, and it doesn't mean I don't have property rights over it. Now, the main distinction we have to make is between private property and public property, since public property is by definition owned by a public entity, owned by the public. They legally cannot infringe on my right. They don't have private property rights. It's public property. So when the town or the county or the city or the state says, no, you cannot carry a firearm on our property, I'm sorry, they're breaking the law, because they're not dealing with private property, public property. But if the Walmart or the Kroger or the Target says, no, we don't want you to do that on our private property, that's perfectly legal. And this, the distinction is important. You see, the government can compel you to go onto public property. You walk out of your home, you walk onto the street, you're on public property. You really cannot exit your home or your property without touching private property. By the same token, you know, you may be compelled to go to a government office to pay taxes, to register a vehicle, to comply with a jury summons. That's public property. They can compel you to. I can't compel you to come onto my property. Walmart can't compel you. Kroger can't compel you. Target can't compel you. These private businesses cannot compel you to come onto their property. You must make a choice. What is more important, your desire to do business with them or your desire to carry a firearm? And that can go into a much longer, more detailed discussion, but that's the basic premise. And if we understand that to legitimately exercise a right, it cannot infringe on the rights of another, that understanding opens up our mind to how we can live peaceably in society, how we can enjoy ourselves, how we can live at liberty with our neighbors, our friends, even the people we disagree with, even the people we may hate, by understanding that it's actually, not only is it important that I not infringe on someone else's rights when I exercise my own, but that it's actually more important that I protect the rights of the person I disagree with than it is that I protect my own rights. Now, as I mentioned, this is part of a course that's available on Constitution Scholars. You can head to constitutionscholars.com. It's absolutely free to join. There's a lot of free material on there, but there is a program on there. There's a course on there to becoming a true constitutional scholar. For people who want to do more than just read other people's work, for the people who want to learn how to study for themselves. And the first step in that's becoming a scholar. The scholarship program is $5 a month or $50 a year, and it grants you access to more material, more videos, more courses, and some more events that we'll be putting on hopefully in the near future. So if you want to find out more, head over to constitutionscholars.com. You can read all about it. You can join absolutely free. There's no hidden fees. There's no, we'll charge you later. Head over, take a look. It's a great place to meet others. It's not simply a training site. It's designed for people who are interested in this to get together, to meet, to find out what's going on with the United States Constitution, even to head to your state group and find out what's going on with your state government and your state constitution. You can also find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts from here, as well as the other hosts on AmericaOutloud.com. Just look under our shows. If you look under, you'll find the Constitution Study. You can find out all the stuff we do here. You can also read the articles and videos I put out every week. This becomes part of an understanding that you can use and that you can share. So head over to, again, to AmericaOutloud.com and find out more. And we'll pick this up again right after the break.
AmericaOutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Every day, we're everyday Americans.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, right here at the Constitution Study. We're talking about rights. We've defined a right. I've given you a really good example of how to apply those rights. How do you use this knowledge? It's simple, two sentences that helps you understand not only when you can apply your rights, but when you really shouldn't. And I want to go into a couple of examples. I hear these all the time. These are in the groups that I deal with, people who spend time reading and studying the Constitution. There's a lot of things that get brought up, and I want to discuss them here. What's interesting is I see this a lot among politicians and lawyers and other people who really should know better but don't. So as I said, we've talked about the only proper way to exercise a right, the only legitimate way to exercise a right is not to infringe on the rights of others. Now, you've probably heard it said, I know I've heard it said before, in fact, I've heard it said recently by the President of the United States, that the Supreme Court has said it is unconstitutional for you to yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, that is, let's see, that's wrong. That's not true. The Supreme Court never said that you cannot cry fire in a crowded theater. Never said it was unconstitutional. In fact, the case that they're referred to is called Schneck versus United States. It has nothing to do with fires, has nothing to do with theaters. It was a question of, could Congress punish someone for encouraging others to dodge the draft? In other words, could Congress punish someone for exercising free speech? And in that opinion, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, the most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic. See, you can't yell. No, that's not what it says. Didn't say you couldn't do it. It says your right to free speech could not be used to infringe on the rights of others. See, if you falsely shout fire in a theater, first of all, let's imagine you're in a theater and you come running in and you yell fire. Well, if there actually is a fire, you're doing a public service. So there's actually nobody would really complain about that. But let's say you falsely come in and yell fire. Well, first of all, you're denying the people who are there their right to peaceably assemble. You're interfering with their right to peaceably assemble. And the theater owner, you've denied them the right of the use of their property by trying to drive people out of it falsely. See, you'd be using your free speech rights to infringe on the rights of others. And what the Supreme Court says, listen, you can't use that to protect you. You cannot claim free speech in order to protect you from causing a panic. We see this, by the way, in simple things like perjury laws. You can't be called as a witness in a trial, get on the stand, spout lies, and when they charge you with perjury, say, "Oh, see, no, you can't punish me. That was my free speech." You can't do it. Does that mean you don't have the ability to say whatever you want? You can say whatever you want. There are consequences from that. The same way as if you walk up to the roof of the building you're in and you step off, there are consequences for that. You fall to the ground. The same thing is true with libel and slander laws. If you lie about people in public, you can be held accountable. That does not say that it is unconstitutional to use that speech. It just says that your right to speak freely does not protect you from the consequences of doing that, because that's irrational. There's not a law on the books. There's not a right protected by the Constitution that if you abuse it, you won't be punished for, or at least you can't be punished for. See, once I use my right to infringe on the rights of others, then I am doing wrong. So, for example, when a group gets together and they have a speaker and a few people come in and yell and scream and shout and don't allow that speaker to speak, if they claim free speech, well, no, because they're using their free speech rights to infringe on the rights of others. The right of their free speech, the right to peaceably assemble. When you have a group of protesters peacefully protesting something or other, and you have other people come in and start yelling and screaming and rioting and looting and pillaging and stealing, they can't claim that they have a right of assembly. No, you have a right to peaceably assemble. And when you use that right to take away, to infringe on the property rights of others, you're wrong and need to be punished. And in fact, it's the fact that so many of these infringements have not been punished that we have such a problem today. It's one of the big issues we have with that. Now, as I said, the first sentence, remember, is that you cannot legitimately exercise a right by infringing on the rights of another. The other is, for a right to be legitimate, you must be capable of exercising it without infringing on the rights of others. So let's talk about two of my favorites. We hear this all the time: your right to education and your right to health care. You cannot have a just claim on someone else's life in order to provide you with education or health care. Because the only way to exercise those rights, if they were rights, would be to force other people to do things. To force educators or healthcare workers, what? To work for free? You walk into a doctor's office and says, "I have a right to health care. You must treat me." And of course, you can't forget the people that actually built the schools and the hospitals that provide the gas, the oil, the electric power that run these buildings, the people who write the textbooks or make the medical equipment. Do we expect all of these people to work for free and to buy the resources to make this stuff and give it to you for free? Are we going to force people to work in these jobs for free because it's your right? Well, what do we call people who are forced to work for others? We call them slaves. So when people talk about your right to free healthcare and free education, they're talking about enslaving other people. No, 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 Paul. They don't have to work for free. We'll just tax people to pay for it. Well, what right do you have to take other people's stuff? See, if you cannot do it individually, how can you authorize someone in government to do it in your name? Remember, governments act in the name of the people. Taxes are collected under threat of punishment with the force of arms behind them. So if you're saying that you're going to take money from someone else to extract money from others under threat of punishment, do you know what you call those people? Extortioners. So people who are claiming the right to education and health care either wish to enslave people or extort people. And I know it sounds harsh, but that's the truth. But Paul, what about things people need to survive? We need food. We need water. We need shelter. Don't we have a right to these things? No. If you're going to force others to work to provide for you, you are infringing on their rights. That cannot be a legitimate right. Now understand, I believe we all have an individual moral duty to assist others truly in need, but that is neither a legal nor a collective one. I have a right, I have a duty to help those I can, who need assistance. If I can provide it, I have a duty to do so. That doesn't mean you have the duty or the right to come tell me where, how, and when I must do it. See, just because you want to be generous does not give you the right to take it from someone else first, either directly or collectively. It is not generous to give other people's money away. Well, unless they gave it to you voluntarily in the first place. See, if you take it against their will, that's theft. It is not generous to force others to pay for your charitable deeds. That's greed. See, you're wanting their money to do your deeds. Now look at politics today. Look at Biden's speech last week, or was it the week before? Look at policy. We just went through an election. Think back. How many commercials, how many flyers, how many speeches involved, almost to the exclusion of everything else, when, where, and how much government will take from others to give to you? But of course, if they're taking them from others, sometimes you're going to be the other. In other words, how much they're going to take from you to give to others. How much money, how much the people in government will steal to pay for their greedy desire to get credit for helping others using other people's money. Alexis de Tocqueville said the American public will endure until the day Congress discovers that it can bribe the public with the public's money. Well, that's pretty much where government is today. Pretty much all government actions involve bribery. And before you get too hoity about it, you're the one accepting the bribe. You want that roadworks project that you want someone else to pay for? You want to give money to the poor, to the needy, to the widow, to the orphan, but you want someone else to pay for it? Well, that's greedy. And when the government turns around and says, yeah, yeah, we'll do that for you, just give us your vote, well, you're accepting a bribe. See, that's why it's important to understand rights. What a right is. How you can exercise it. Because when you understand that using a freedom or a liberty to infringe on the rights of others is just as evil as when the government denies it, well, it changes your outlook on things. you begin to, at least I did, I begin to look at things differently. I look at situations that used to aggravate me, like no gun signs on storefronts. And I went from being frustrated. I still don't like them, but I understand they have the right to control who has access to their private property. So I grant them that right. I grant them the recognition, I should say, of that right. I may inform them whether or not I will do business under those conditions, but I recognize their ability, their authority to do that. It's important to understand when you hear somebody you disagree with, it is not right to shut them down. You don't improve rights by infringing on the rights of others. You deal with bad speech, not by stifling bad speech, but by promoting good speech. It's one of the reasons why these social media platforms, what they're doing may be legal, but it's horrendous. They have every right to decide what is and isn't allowed on their platform. What they don't have is in my opinion, the moral high ground to say, we're going to manipulate the information, but we should be protected for doing that. See, to me, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is a basic First Amendment violation, because it's Congress has passed a law that deprives you of your right to petition the government for a redress of grievance against these companies. So again, let's summarize. A right is a just claim, immunity, or privilege, meaning it is equitable, it is due, it is merited. It can be alienable or unalienable depending on where the right comes from. It can be positive or negative based on the demands it puts on others. But it can only be legitimately exercised if it does not infringe on the legitimate rights of others. So remember these two sentences. You can only legitimately exercise a right if it does not infringe on the legitimate rights of another. So for a right to be legitimate, you must be able to exercise it without infringing on the rights of others. It's this basic understanding of rights that changes how we view things. It involves so much of the discussion of not simply rights. I mean, we talk about gay rights and women's rights and trans rights and these rights and those rights and those. We stop to think, are we using these rights to infringe on the rights of others? Let me give you some examples. These are relatively recent news articles I found. I just picked these out as talking points. So we have teachers and healthcare worker unions demanding that Biden cancel student debt for public service. Now, if you have entered into a contract and you borrow money, when you borrow money, you sign a contract, you agree to pay it back. Do you have a right to demand that that loan be forgiven? No, because you're infringing on the rights of others. Either the people who loaned you that money. Now, could you work it off? In other words, if someone came and borrowed money from me and said, listen, I don't have the cash, but I will work it off. Okay, I have the choice of whether or not to accept that. But this demand that people's debts be canceled, you know, again, you're violating the rights of the people who had this in the case of publicly funded student loans taken at the point of a gun. How about the simple right of governments exercising just powers, meaning powers consented to by the people? The people never consented to the president writing law. And that's exactly what would happen when President Biden says, nope, we're going to forgive public debts. It's not his role. It's not a power delegated to him. Florida, lawmakers approved an anti-writing law. The idea being, listen, if you riot, meaning if your peaceable assembly devolves into damaging a public disorder looting and rioting and stealing, well, there should be punishment. They actually impose felony-level penalties for engaging in violence or disorderly assemblies, obstructing traffic during unpermitted protests, or for destroying or toppling monuments. See, their right to peaceably assemble ends when they infringe on the rights of others. That includes when they block the streets so that other people can't get through, when they damage private property, when they damage public property. Another one popped up is where Biden said, I love this, quote, who in God's name needs a weapon that can hold 100 rounds? Well, I would like to remind Mr. Biden that it's called the Bill of Rights, not the Bill of Needs. I have a right to keep and bear arms, any arms, not just firearms, any arms. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Whether or not he thinks I need 100 rounds, 1,000 rounds, or a bazooka is none of his business. Up until the point I used that right to keep and bear arms to harm someone else, actually harm someone else, I have the right to do what I want. See, we used to live in a free country. Not so much anymore. I have a report here that Facebook banned reports on the BLM co-founder's $3.2 million home purchases. One of the founders of BLM has been buying property. Now, I don't have a problem with them buying property. To me, it's a perfect example of socialism. What do you mean, Paul? Socialism is everybody shares everything. No. Take a look at every socialist government that has existed in this world, and what do you find? You find the ones at the top, the leaders, are as rich as can be, and everyone else is as poor as can be. So that's a perfect example of socialism in action. We will take all the funds from the people doing the work, and then the people on top will spend it on a lavish lifestyle. Now, Facebook has every right to say, we don't want that distributed. That's their right. To me, it's just more proof that Facebook is not to be trusted. They're lying to you. In this case, it's a lie of omission. Why would you trust someone that's lying to you? They have the legal right to do that. I do not challenge their right to do that. Just as I don't challenge my right to go somewhere else. I have a report here of the aviation industry. Apparently, aviation leaders have put out that they think vaccine passports should be voluntary and temporary. Well, again, private airlines, if they want to require a vaccine to get on their plane, they have every legal right to do so. Just as I have every legal right to avoid them like the plague. I've said it before here. I'm going to be in North Dakota. I'm heading to North Dakota this August. The dates seem to have been set, so hopefully they'll be on the website soon. And I refuse to fly. It would be quicker and easier for me to fly. But I don't trust these airlines as far as I can throw them. Delta, United, American, I don't trust them. And I'm not going to fly on someone I don't trust. Now, if there's someone out there that knows of an airline that is willing to protect the rights of its passengers, that's willing to treat them fairly and justly, I am more than willing to consider flying with them. Just have them contact me. You can contact me through the website or contact me at constitutionstudy.com. But while they have the legal right to do it, to me, it just means that they're evil companies and I don't trust them. And I won't do business with them. And there's one in here. This one really got my attention. And again, it's from my adopted home state of Tennessee. That's right. The Volunteer State does it again. I love this. The Tennessee General Assembly passed a bill prohibiting local governments from classifying workers as non-essential. Now, the good news is that's great. The problem is the governor and the state government retain that power. So it's one of those, you know, well, there's some good news, but not all good news. See, nobody has the right to tell you you are non-essential. You're essential to somebody. If you're a street sweeper in some little bitty small town, you're essential to you and to your family. So the fact that the General Assembly says, yes, okay, local governments can't do it, but we retain the right, well, that just means we got one step in the right direction. We got more to do. Because government does not have the right to tell you you're not essential. Any more than I would have the right to say, the person who takes the money at the coffee shop is not essential. That's a private business. They can do what they want. And I not only do not recognize the power of the state government or the governor to do this, it's not simply I don't recognize it. It's a violation of the Constitution. You cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and your job is to some extent your property. Now, technically, it's the property of the person who employs you, be that an individual or a business. And the government has no authority to deprive them of that, nor to deprive you of the opportunity to go do that job. See, they own the job. You own yourself and your willingness to go do that job. The government doesn't have the legal authority to do that. But we're back to that question. Can they deprive you of rights? See, whenever government passes a law not necessary to the public, not just that they think would be better for the public, not necessary or expedient for the public, there's a simple word for it. Tyranny. Understanding our rights, understanding how we can exercise them properly, and understanding what the governments legally can and cannot do with our rights is important if we are to remain free. You can claim all the rights. The Bill of Rights can claim all the great things, have all these nice shiny words. If we do not put them into action, the Bill of Rights is nothing but ink on parchment. It is we the people putting that into action that makes it effective. So now that you know what a right is, now that you have the tools to quickly and easily identify not only what a right is, but whether or not it's being legitimately used, what will you do? It's the question I have for people everywhere. What will you, once you understand what a right is, what will you do? Will you require that solutions to problems not infringe on the rights of others? Will you stand up for the rights of those who you disagree with? You know, it's easy to stand up for the rights of people you agree with. What about the rights of the people you disagree with? Will you stand up for the right of the person who thinks guns are evil to say so? Will you stand up for the organizations that you disagree with to peaceably protest? When I was younger, we used to say, I may vehemently disagree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Will America return to that? More importantly, will the American people return to that. Will you stand up to government agents and protect the rights of everyone? I keep saying this. It's actually more important for you to stand up for the rights of others. So when you see a government agent trying to shut down a business, infringing on their rights, will you stand with that business owner? Will you stand with that neighbor? Will you stand with that teacher? Will you stand up and help protect their rights? And to paraphrase our founding fathers, will you pledge your life, your fortune, and your sacred honor to the cause of protecting rights and liberty in America? Because that's probably what it's going to take. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take money. It's going to take all of these things if we want America to remain free. It's also going to take a little time to know what's going on, to hear what's going on, and learn to parse it and to understand what's going on. And it's one of the reasons why I recommend you head to AmericaOutloud.com. Listen on our player, listen on iHeartRadio Network. We have a media player. You can listen on any web browser anywhere in the world. We have apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can listen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now you can even hear the podcast on those very same apps. Because being aware of what's going on and then analyzing it from the viewpoint of, is it the legitimate exercise of a right, is what is necessary if we are to remain free. So hopefully you learned something today, and hopefully you'll join me again next time.